Today's Fox Football Podcast is brought to you by FIFA 19 Champions Rise. Show us your champion moment for your chance to win Champions League tickets, including flights and accommodation, thanks to FUT United and FIFA 19. Terms and conditions apply. See www.futunited.com for details. That's www.futunited.com.
We're allowed to swear on this podcast, are we?
It stands for FIFA Ultimate Team. You blokes are way too old.
Nicely done, Mike.
I didn't say anything, and I got slapped.
Look at the expression on your face.
I thought this could have been 10 down.
Yes, hello and welcome to episode 2 of the new Wednesday edition of the Fox Sports Football Podcast. Every week we'll look at the big issues around the game here in Australia and abroad. Today the focus will be on last night's epic FFA Cup final. We'll have an A-League review, which will have to include the VAR, unfortunately. I'll have some exclusive news for Wellington Phoenix fans. There's a W-League review and some quickfire questions at the end, including Brenton Speed on Paul Pogba, man or myth. And that's not on Brenton Speed. It's whether Paul Pogba is a man or a myth. My name is Murray Shaw, and joining me, as always, is Brenton Speed and Andy Harper. How are you guys?
Good, mate.
Very good, Belford. Thank you.
Buzzing after last night.
It was brilliant, wasn't it? We'll get to that in just a moment. First things first, a lot of talk over the week about what this podcast is going to be called. You raised nude nuts last week, Harps, but the point being, if you search for that on Google, you might come up with something that isn't quite the Fox Football Podcast.
Get the lollipop stick out.
Yeah.
I didn't raise nude nuts as a name.
Right.
Someone else did.
I did.
I was speaking.
Yeah. But I did get some feedback from teachers at my kid's school who listened to the podcast and thanks
Googled
to that.
The nuts.
Well, their radar's up for this sort of stuff. These guys are professional. Their radar's up for this sort of stuff, and they sort of took me aside at pickup, after school pickup, and said, I don't know, if you want kids listening to this, that could send them down an Alice in Wonderland rabbit hole. You don't want them going there. So hopefully that's been erased now.
We've actually had some correspondence. Darcy Patterson suggests Thumbs United. I don't understand why.
Well, he had a photo of the thumbs, which looked like our melons.
Oh, I see. Right. That's the reference. Right. Yeah. Now,
I ate a boiled egg yesterday. Shall we call it Eggheads? I mean, it's just a free.
There's already a TV show called Eggheads, wasn't there?
Conan.
Some scientific sort of show?
Probably. Well, that definitely rules us.
But I think what we're going to go with is Footballed. You happy with that?
Not bad.
Not bad?
Yeah.
Is it a winner? Phil likes it.
Yeah, I'm in on it.
Good.
Yeah. Bigger fish to fry.
Football that is. All right, let's start, as we will every week, with a player you enjoyed watching from the weekend's football in both A-League, W-League, or it could be elsewhere. Speedy, you wanted to give a rap to Connor Payne from the Mariners.
Yeah, in world sport, often they give out a most improved award and people say, what do you want that award for? But I reckon Connor Payne, if there is such thing in the A-League, is looking at the most improved award. Scored in week one, inside 5 minutes away to Brisbane. And on the weekend, that pass to Ross McCormack is a pass overlooked in world football. It's on so often. The header back out by LaRocca wasn't flash. It was central. But how many players then go, oh, here's my big chance. I'm just going to welly it because it's coming towards me and I'll put it in the top. Oh, no, I'll put it in the row Z. But Connor Payne goes side foot pass to Ross McCormack, who sticks it away. That pass is on so often. Credit Connor Payne for seeing it. Whether Mike Mulvey has coached that into him, I don't know. Or whether Connor Payne's watched a lot of football now and he's gone, mate, there's an opportunity there. So credit Connor Payne for coming up with the assist of the weekend, in my opinion.
Now, it's called players you enjoyed watching, but I know, Speedy, we could, just for you, because you are a referee aficionado, it could be referees you enjoyed watching, and you did want to give a rap to another ref.
Yeah, well, Jared Gillard in the FFA Cup final, outstanding, as he has been in so many big Australian games. But Alex King is the one in Brisbane on the weekend. I was alongside Nick Meredith for the call, and we loved his performance. I mean, he cut out the nonsense as soon as possible. He chatted to the players briefly but succinctly and made his point. And he made all the right calls. So credit to him. It was only his eighth A-League game, and he looks like he's got a bit about him. And, you know, the refs cop a bit of a whack, but it's good to see Gillett and King performing really well.
All right, Harps player you enjoyed watching from the weekend. And there's a bit of a Mariners theme to this because you wanted to give a rap to Storm Roo for Melbourne victory.
Well, Storm has been a player who's sort of hovered around his own potential, if I can put it that way. I know he's a Kiwi international. He's been around a few clubs. But he's shown more promise than he's actually delivered. And that promise, is very encouraging what he might do. And I just really like the way he's settling it at Melbourne Victory. I know they've lost two games, but you wouldn't say Melbourne Victory have been outplayed in both games. And the game could have gone either way. And Storm Roo puts on the cross for KSK Honda's goal in the derby. And then last week scored himself. And it's just emerging to me that his link with Honda, two players almost diametrically opposed as far as football upbringing is concerned at the stage of their career, are blending really nicely. It's one of these bizarre chemical reactions that can happen from time to time. And Storm Roo has been eye-catching from what I've been watching in the first couple of weeks. And I would like to think that part of this settling in process at Melbourne Victory with one of the great players Asia's ever produced in KSK Honda can really see Storm Roo become the dominant right fullback in the competition. I think most of us watching him over years have thought, you know, this he can play Storm, but it's never really, and he's had that horrible injury to deal with as well, but it's never really materialised on a consistent basis. Well, out of last weekend, I'm prepared to jump off the perch and say, you know, here we go, Storm, now's the time.
It's a good point about marquee players. I mean, they bring a lot to the league, but what they also can bring to the league is really helping out younger players within their team. You'd hope Alessandro Del Piero did that with some Sydney players when he was there, and maybe Storm Roo is going to work hard with KSK Honda and try and learn something from the great Japanese player.
Well, it's all looking good so far. I've been thoroughly impressed by his opening couple of games.
Now, player I enjoyed watching, you guys went A-League. Given we started our coverage of the W League, I'll pick a W League player, and I was going to say the American Savannah McCaskill, who played for Sydney FC on the Thursday night, the opening match of the W League season. She's a 22-year-old who played for the South Carolina Gamecocks. And the interesting thing about McCaskill, Speedy, was that she was signed under this cloak of darkness by Ante Juric, as though they were just going to sneak her in. They announced her signing on the
Hard
day.
Hard to sneak a Gamecock around.
Yeah. and then all of a sudden she's just turned up and she was a wonderful player. There's no bigger rap you can give on a player than when you're watching them halfway through the first half. I'm like, I'm not sure whether she's right-footed or left-footed.
Yeah.
She was that good on both sides. The one ball to Caitlin Ford that was offside was outstanding. And she just looks like someone who's going to be great to watch for Sydney FC throughout the season.
Yeah, a fantastic player. She was picked 2 in the NWSL draft a year ago out of college after starring in college. And then that team folded, so she was in limbo for a little while. She wound up at Sky Blue FC in the United States. They had an ordinary season, so she didn't really enjoy it that much. And she's come down under to enjoy her football again. And boy, she's going to enjoy it the way she's playing, and a fantastic player. And I think she'll probably drift infield. While she was making the point during the call that she probably looks more comfortable as an attacking midfielder just passing those balls through, she was stuck out in the right wing and performed really well there anyway.
Just a clarification, in the W League, and pardon my ignorance, what's the foreign limit rule per squad?
I reckon it's 4. And Ante Juric in last year's grand final, he had 2 foreigners. And I spoke to him last week, and he's gone to 4. He felt like if he's going to win the championship and be a good chance of competing against Melbourne City, then he's going to up it to 4. And on Savannah McCaskill, he said, I'm going to announce a signing tomorrow. No one knows we've got her yet, but she's an absolute gun. And they did announce it on game day. But what they did on Instagram, the fellow Americans, I think it might have been Colaprico, who's pronounced Colaprico by Ante Juric, and that's part of a running gag there, apparently. She put an Instagram photo of playing ping pong with McCaskill. So they said, what's doing? All those in Instagram land, they knew that McCaskill was a Sydney FC player. So there you go.
Bit of ping pong diplomacy.
Righto, we'll get to the W League chat a little bit later on, but let's start with an amazing night in Adelaide last night for the FFA Cup final. In fact, you could say a good win for Adelaide United.
Meantime, here's Galloway, slings it in. Halloran, good win! Oh, my goodness! That is a stunning goal, this time with the right foot of
from Ben Halloran. The centre forward laying the ball off to the on-running Craig Goodwin, who says...
Let's start with you, Harps, because you were at the game. Sure. Speedy and myself enjoyed the coverage on Fox from our couch. Separate couches. It looked like a fantastic atmosphere and just a great showcase for the game.
Well, it's the latest instalment in what Cooper Stadium, Hymar Stadium, continues to deliver for the game. There have been some epic nights. I mean, you go way back, and I can, into the NSL, but we'll keep it obviously to the A-League era. But this is a great venue, and it was another great night last night. And Adelaide adding to their stash of A-League era credits. It's a second FFA Cup title. They've been in a couple of grand finals, 1-1, Asian Champions League final. And this sort of history all coalesces around nights like last night. It doesn't come from nowhere. And that's why nights like last night are so special atmospherically, because, you know, there's a seedbed in Adelaide for this sort of stuff. Then you put on top of that this team, which I think is sort of a little bit underdone depth-wise, certainly when you compare it with Sydney FC. But they're driven on by this coach in whom, by and large, I'm very impressed. I just love Marco Kurtz, what he's doing. I love the energy his team responds, the fans get right behind it. And it was just an epic night, a fantastic game of football with the right mix of technical quality, some beautiful touches from players, obviously the Goodwin goals, combined with roll your sleeves up and get stuck in. I mean, the skirmishes around midfield, the close-handed combat, it's exciting to watch.
Yeah.
And it's something we've talked down in the modern era a bit because of the whole curriculum stuff and the whole fight ball thing that Harm Berger labelled Australian football with, and that pervading, all-pervasive European attitude that Australians can't play, they just fight. Well, last night we had a fair bit of both, and I loved it.
And given that you're at the stadium, did the left foot union turn up and just kick Craig Goodwin out?
Mate, he's off. Yeah. Put it this way, he's on a standing warning because, you know, everyone can get away with one, right? Every lefty can get away with one. But if he gets another one like that from here until the end of his career, they'll revoke his membership.
And how good was the Fox football camera work as well? That low angle from halfway, I presume that's the halfway line camera there, Muzz, that captured that right foot strike right into the top corner. That's as good as it gets.
Give our cameraman a rap, and I can tell you who that was, Graham Fisher, who does a wonderful job.
Flew him in for the big
game. Does a wonderful job, which is why he goes off and shoots at World Cups, etc. I particularly enjoyed the emotion in John Cosmina after the game. He was really, really chuffed with the whole night. Now, Cosy's obviously got a long association with Adelaide United. His son now is, of course, the chief executive, but he was almost tearing up at the end of that game. He was absolutely loving it. And speaking of a bloke that would have loved a bit of the rough and tumble as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, make no mistake, Cosy's now a Renaissance man. You know, this is not the guy who just finished his career as a player, which was a pretty muscular one, let's face it, and a great player as well. But, you know, he didn't mind putting it about in the era when it was de rigueur to put it about. But
so how's he changed? He takes him out for dinner first.
Well, he teared up.
Yeah.
I mean, he wouldn't have cried with his thumbs in a vice as a footballer. But He made plenty of other players cry. I can give it to you. But, you know, it was just nice to be with Cozzy. We had the Mike Cockerell medal as well, and Cozzy was Mike's, you know, best mate, and his son involved in the club, and Cozzy taking the club to the grand finals. He started his career in Adelaide, an Adelaide boy. So there is no wonder why he was so emotionally attached to the whole event.
And how could he not get caught up in the moment last night? I was sitting on the couch. I got chills on multiple occasions. I've got no association with either club. I'm a neutral observer, but it was just fabulous to watch a packed house. Now, I put it on the agenda a few times 15 months ago. I said the FFA Cup final, when the semi-finals are won, and you know who the finalists are, have a draw so it's authentic, and the first team out hosts the final. They finally did it this year, and there was no arguments out of who should be hosting the final. Last year it got given to Sydney FC when Arnie was in charge. From now on, it's a host that's won out of the hat, and I think that added to the authenticity last night.
Is there just one from left field and shoot it down immediately, Muzz, particularly from...
I will.
Okay, move on. Next point.
Go on.
You know, doesn't
go on.
He's a pain in the backside.
I was waiting for a fire back on that.
You know,
I was just waiting.
He spends
to see
the
what
whole
said.
Week. He spends the and verify this, but he spends the whole. Come on, you blokes. I don't want to run this myself. I need ideas. So you pipe up. We say no. We move on. Okay, so we move on.
Go on. Say what.
Come on,
say.
EP.
Go on. Say what you're going to say.
No.
All right.
I work to rule.
Do you want to talk about Craig Goodwin?
No. I want to raise this point from left field.
Thank you.
Is there no? But is there any room for home and away finals? Is there any value in that?
I don't think so.
Why?
The general problem there is that the first leg becomes quite dull because there's not as much riding on it, so it all kicks off in the second leg.
Yeah,
I think that's generally how home and away finals sort of work.
I'm not advocating it necessarily, but I wonder if it's just worth sitting down, going through a few yoga exercises, emptying the lungs, finding your central chai or kai, whatever, and exploring it. Because
I think our final structure is as good as
it gets,
because it's elimination. It's elimination all the way.
Yeah.
So every game is must watch. Someone's going to get knocked out tonight. Someone's going to advance. I think it's as good as it gets.
Is that typical of Australian football, though, that we enjoyed an incredible night like last night and we're instantly looking to change it?
No. Well, I'll take that as a veiled criticism, Murray. I was just raising a discussion point. As per your instruction as an executive producer.
And no,
this
because
is the
I also
point to discuss things. So
I also read.
It.
I also read. Should the tournament be changed to be a pre-season tournament, so that the grand final is before the A-League season starts?
I look,
and again, I thought, Do we need to?
This takes nothing away from last night, which everyone's in complete agreement. It was a fantastic occasion, right? However, I don't think the final, the format for the FFA Cup, is actually completely settled yet. And I don't say that as a point of controversy or to muckrake or to take away from last night, but the fact of the matter is, you know, there are still shifting sands in Australian football with the various tiers, and the new Congress is going to come in. And, for example, I would love, as a development for the FFA Cup, that the winner of that cup goes into the Champions League to give more steel to that competition. Mm. So I think these things are reasonably up for discussion. There are two reasons why one might consider a home and away final. Firstly, you get the potential of double the fun, right? And secondly, as a minor issue, it takes away from the vagaries of a draw. Who gets the home shot?
Yep.
And both home fans get a chance to cheer their team. We know the shortcomings of that is the first game can be a little bit or there could be a blowout by the time you get to the second leg. I don't know. I'm not advocating it necessarily, but I do wonder if it's worth having a chat about.
Yeah, I just loved everything about last night. And there were a lot of people then saying, why not have it on a weekend, an FFA Cup final? Have we tried that once?
Yep. Yeah. Melbourne Victory versus Perth.
Yeah, I reckon last night was so good because it's the only live sport in town on the telly. Sydney FC, credit those fans who got there on a weeknight.
Brilliant.
But Adelaide United packed it out. It was just so good. Tuesday night cup final or Wednesday cup final, whichever way you want to work it. I don't want to change that. I don't want to move it to a weekend. I think it gets lost in a weekend when other sports are on, be it around the world or in Australia. I think keep it midweek when nothing else is on.
Yep. I don't want to be a Debbie Downer on it, but does Craig Goodwin's two goals, Harps, paper over the cracks that Adelaide... Well, they can't rely on Craig Goodwin to score every week in the A-League. I mean, he has every week in the FFA Cup.
Yeah.
They desperately need a striker.
They do.
They didn't invest in one in the off-season.
Mm. It's been, as you...
Can they have success
but as you pointed
without
out,
a striker?
You know, this has been a lingering thing for a couple of years at Adelaide, that they haven't found someone to really lead the line. And in my mind, I think they did get out of jail a little bit last night. And having said what I've said about Marco Kurtz, and I take nothing away from it, I think I love what he's doing with the team. I thought he actually exposed the team last night by that decision to play Ben Halloran up front, who's clearly not a centre forward. And in the time that he's been asked to play that role, has clearly not developed in that role. And so my point going into last night was you're losing an experienced, fast, good winger in Ben Halloran to just be a nothing centre forward, and you've got Ryan Strain, who's a very, very good player, but not really an attacking winger, and you've lost two positions to try and fill one. And so I thought that they were potentially very exposed by that, and in the end, it's hard to mount a case that Sydney FC were outplayed by Adelaide. It's a very even game, and the fact of the matter is they got beaten by two belting goals, and... at that point, you just got to dip your lid and say, well, that's the way it goes.
And when Ken Ilso came on, the dynamic of the game changed. He made things happen.
Completely
and he can play number nine. Michael Zappone asked him about that post-game and he gave the old answer, I'll play wherever the coach wants me to.
Yeah.
But he's maybe a player because Ben Halloran, a lot of people throw the O on the front of Halloran, Muzz. You any ideas on that one?
Yes, because there's an O'Halloran that plays for Melbourne City.
Do you reckon we can let everyone know on the podcast that his name is Ben Halloran?
Yep.
Because the O just seems to slip in there a lot, I've noticed. But you can
send out a missive.
Throw him out on the wing, and you get, as you say, you get more out of him on the wing, and throw Ken Ilso in the middle. That might be the answer for the short term.
Mm. Can they also look at a loan from another club?
Well, they can do all these sorts of things, but ultimately, don't you reckon this ends up...
Is there a young striker floating around another club that isn't getting a game that would be would benefit from going to Adelaide?
There are 700,000 people playing the game in this country. Mm. You've got to be able to find one. And the A-League's been going for 13 into its 14th season. Clubs could have organised eugenically their own offspring and nearly have had players ready for A-League action. So... it's a failure on a number of fronts, but it all is sheeted down into the lap of the owners. It's time to break into new ground. And at the moment, you're sitting back watching and there's not a demonstrable difference between this administration and the investment in the team and that which preceded it. And I don't think that's what people and Adelaide fans are expecting.
All right, let's leave the FFA Cup final there for the moment and move on to the A-League, but... I suppose the link there is Sydney FC, and I know, Harps, you've got your views on this. Have Sydney FC signed a croc in Sim De Jong?
Well, let's hope not, firstly. Secondly, let's wish him a speedy recovery. But thirdly, anyone's gilding the lily if they're saying this wasn't a risky piece of recruitment. You know, Sim De Jong's career has been crueled by injuries. And this was a chance for him to get away from Europe and freshen up and have another proper crack at the remaining time as a professional footballer, and that he hasn't lasted particularly long before he's injured his hamstring again certainly puts that decision in the crosshairs, don't you reckon?
Well, you look at the soft tissue history in recent times, calf injury, groin injury, another calf, a thigh muscle strain, hamstring injuries all the way back to 2011 when he tore a muscle fibre. So he's, I think you used the term paper mache at times, and sadly, Sim De Jong is held together by that. But you look at his CV, a Dutch international and a regular scorer with Ajax as well, and played in the Premier League with Newcastle, and Sydney FC have taken a chance. Hopefully it doesn't backfire.
You guys both called the Sydney Derby on Saturday night. Did Steve Corriker make an error by bringing him on for the last 30 minutes when they were up 2-0 and they may not have needed him? Then he gets injured and now we've got a long-term problem.
No, I reject that. I mean, if he's fit to play, he's fit to play. They didn't not play him because they didn't think he was fit. They didn't not play
him
to rest him.
They tried to rest him.
But, mate, if a player can't come on in a game that's already been sorted physically and survive 25 minutes. Mm. No. I don't buy that at all. I think the images, Muzz, were telling, you know, when he just forlornly made his way to the bench and then he just crumpled. Mm. And he knows exactly.
Very sad. Yeah.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
And we do wish him the best. But there are two
absolutely.
Issues here, the player's welfare, and then there have to be questions about where the club goes from now, because I just think back, it can't be unsalvageable. However, I think back last year, Thomas Christensen had those horrible issues, right, at the Brisbane Roar. And he looked like he was finished. You know, he had back problems. He'd come on, he lasted 10 minutes in one game and was off. He's back firing now. So these things can be fixed. I know we're talking about a different player, but we just wish Sim all the best.
A big test for Magic Hands Elias out at Sydney FC.
Yes, has been good for them before. Let's stick with the Sydney Derby then, because you two were both in the commentary box, as I said. We'll talk about the VAR decision a little bit later. But I guess the other talking point coming out of that game was the behaviour on the sideline of Marcus Babbel. And I tried to do some research yesterday. Is this the first coach ever to be red carded in the world? Because I think Australia, the MLS and lower leagues of the UK use red cards for coaches, but I don't think it's ever been issued. So he could be a world first coach to be sent off. I must admit, I was on the sideline and I thought he was a little bit unlucky to be sent off. He was clearly frustrated, and you could understand his frustration. I don't think he abused the referee. He threw, obviously, his jacket down that we all saw, but that was more in frustration than necessarily attacking an official.
He gave it an almighty welly.
The A-frame.
Yeah.
And the fourth official did cop a spray. The fourth official was the one who complained, saying that he was sworn at by Marcus Babbel, and that's why he is red-carded. But you can understand the frustration.
I don't think he swore at the official. I think he swore at
the official. Official felt like.
Yeah, okay.
He felt like it was targeted at him.
Yeah, but you can understand his frustration, of course.
Absolutely.
And then we get to the situation on Friday night when we had a very angry Marco Kurtz after the game against Newcastle.
Absolutely. Marco Kurtz was blowing up, and he's got it in his locker, doesn't he? But I didn't think that was a penalty decision that the Reds should have got. Unfortunately, George Blackwood did wind up with a broken shoulder, as Kurtz explained pre-game. We saw the shots of Blackwood watching on from the corporate box last night. But I think Kurtz does need to put a lid on it, whether that's something the owners, the aforementioned owners of the Reds, have to have a chat to him about. But I'm not sure you're going to change him too much.
Do you think Harps, one of these days in our lifetimes, that coaches will move from the sidelines up to the coaches' boxes like we see in other sports?
You know,
they do inflame the situation by being on the sideline, don't they?
They do. But it's a deep part of the culture, isn't it, for football coaches?
So they can yell at the players player when you were playing.
I'm not talking about the behaviour. Being in proximity is a deep part of the culture, and I must, I've been in both situations, a lot more as an observer than as a coach, but you get a much better view up top, but. There is something about the connection when you're on the sideline. And unlike a lot of sports, our code of football doesn't have a complete phalanx of specialist coaches offering insights and timeouts and, you know, injury stoppages to run stuff on. It's the guy or girl who's got their hands on the levers, and everything goes through them. So I think it'll be a big breakaway for someone to actually do it, because the culture is so entrenched. And I must say that the little bit of coaching I've done, I much preferred to be in proximity than I would have wanted to be removed from the situation. Doesn't mean they're not expected to behave, right? Which is why Babbel has correctly accepted his ban. And the big thing with this is, yeah, we understand his frustration, Muzz, but the point is, this is being beamed out to families across Australia.
Mm.
We have massive issues at grassroots level getting people to...
I don't disagree.
..be referees, and you just can't accept that.
I don't disagree with that. Now, speaking of coaches, Hubs, I know you wanted to give Tony Popovich a big rap. Obviously, yeah. Perth Glory getting that great victory.
Yeah.
What a game that was against Melbourne Victory. But you believe Tony Popovich is bringing a lot, and it's good bringing a lot back to the A-League. Good to have him back.
Well, I mean, I went out pretty hard pre-season about believing Perth can win the comp because of Popovich. And I don't want to turn this into a season-long, parade for Tony Popovich. But I need to make this point.
Or parade for Andy Harper's pre-season selection.
No, well, they haven't won it yet. So, but particularly with Graham Arnold moving out of the A-League scene into the national team set up, because, you know, Arnie brings this type of intensity as well. And what Popovich brings, like Marco Kurtz, an intensity with his team that lifts the intensity of other coaches. I think Kevin Muscat is a much better and much more energetic coach with these types of opponents in the opposite dugout. And, you know, this was really important that, firstly, Popovich came back, that he went to Perth, because we need Perth firing. But because of Graham Arnold's removal from the A-League setup, that was going to leave a big intensity hole in the dugouts, I reckon. And Popovich has... does his bit to fill that. Marco Kurtz as well. Mate, we don't want 10 coaches all behaving the same way. They've all got their own way of doing it. But I sincerely believe that the A-League is a much better property with the intensity that Popovich brings to his team and just the level of physical preparedness and mental focus. Too often that sort of stuff can go wandering in professional sport.
And you look at the team, there aren't that many inclusions from the previous regime. One day comes in to midfield. Economides comes up with the winner, I suppose. But you look at the likes of Kianese and Keogh, who are doing damage up front. They look like new players, don't they, under Popovich? And if you don't follow Popper, you don't do the training regime, you don't get the skin folds down to the level that he wants, then you're out the door and you're not playing. And obviously they've bought in and it's showing. That's a fabulous win in Melbourne.
Melbourne Victory now none from two, with the grand final replay coming up on Saturday night. They've got a problem because Kenny Athew looks like he's injured himself and could be out for a few weeks. And, of course, their big off-season signing, well, not their biggest off-season signing, but one of them, Ola Toivonen, is also out of action for a couple of weeks with a soft tissue injury. What do they do up front, gents?
I think they'll struggle. They've got Newcastle in a grand final replay this weekend, and historically they've copped some whacks up there in the Hunter, haven't they? Conceded four goals on multiple occasions at that venue. So I think it's a big opportunity for the Jets, who play their home opener, to get one over the Melbourne Victory. And what do they do? Does someone play in a false nine type of arrangement for the Melbourne Victory?
Well, it's going to require some alteration, because Victory have gone to a diamond midfield, which is the reason why you bring Toivonen in. And if he's not ready, and Kenny Athew is your cut and paste for that. And without them, you know, the whole approach is exposed, and it hasn't even settled in yet because of the lack of Toivonen's availability, etc. So, you know, it's going to be a point of fascination immediately to see if Kevin Muscat sticks to his guns and just tells someone to go and play at the point so that the rest of the machine can keep going through its gears. Or he reverts to maybe a 4-3-3 and with someone dropping off the line, maybe a James Troisi playing in the middle but dropping a little bit. So this is not an isolated issue. We've talked about Adelaide's gap in the front line. Victory looked to fill theirs, but now they're short as well. Very interesting to see. And you don't reckon that Newcastle Jets are looking forward to this match on Saturday? And another challenge for Victory, just on that point, Muzz, this is the first time, correct me if I'm wrong, that they'll play a Newcastle team with a fit Ronny Vargas. I know he played in the grand final, but, you know, he was a mile off getting back to match fitness. He missed all the Victory games otherwise last year, didn't he?
And Vargas's goal last Friday night, how about that subtle move in and away on Galloway? Galloway looked over, where is he? Oh, he's got a tap in. That was so good.
What a
player. So good.
Let's move on to VAR, gents, because, again, it was the topic of conversation on Saturday night out of your match in the Sydney Derby. News today that Craig Zetta has been, to use a Eddie Maguire expression, boned from the VAR box for this weekend. He was the man at the centre of the grand final, the Melbourne Derby, and then the Sydney Derby. So Zetta has been relieved of his duties who knows for how long. Let's just hope it's probably this weekend. What do you make of that?
Well, it should appease the masses. They wanted a head on a stick.
Does it appease them?
Well, in the short term, but no, people who want heads on sticks never appease long term. Look, in or outside of Craig Zetta, what happened had to happen Monday morning, and you'll mind my language, which won't be blue, but the image will be graphic. Monday morning, David Gallop and Greg O'Rourke needed to walk into FFA HQ, get the referees in the room, VAR mob, the whole box and dice, close the doors behind them and say, listen, you lot, put your toys away.
All words to that.
Yeah. Channeling Mike Cockrell now. Listen, you lot, put your toys away. I don't want to see this rectangle with your fingers unless a player's run onto the field with a sawn-off shotgun and started taking people out, right? Otherwise, put your damn toys away. Now, that conversation might have happened before Sunday night. That might have happened immediately after what erupted on Saturday night, because there was an incident. Chris Griffiths-Jones was in the VAR centre, and there was that incident with Costa Barbarousis bearing down on goal. I think it was Honda who swung one of those in-swinging crosses. Costa's about on the six-yard box, stretching for the ball, can't get it. And who's got some sort of hold of his arm? It's Shane Lowry. Now, Simon, with whom I was working, threw the VAR question to me, and I didn't want to inflame it. I made my comment, and then we moved on. That was it. No one was in the referee saying, you better have a look at that, you better have a look at that. It just was play on. If he gave a penalty, I don't think there would have been any complaint. The fact that he didn't give a penalty, the game flowed on, and that was the VAR at work, right? It wasn't a clear need to get involved. And so I think that's the situation that everyone wants, and that's that put your shotgun away type approach might have happened. The only other thing about Craig Zetta, who is a Lions person by profession, right? That's how he got into this game. He is an assistant referee. And so, therefore, you can understand why he's jumped on that offside on the whole business in the derby, because that's what he's trained to look for, right? What about the bloke who's actually on the field? It was 2 metres from him. Has that guy been dropped, the assistant referee? His name escapes me.
He's trained to look at it as an assistant referee.
Mm.
I don't think he should be trained to look at it as the bloke in the VAR box.
No, but now you're touching on something. Yeah.
Different roles.
Totally different roles. But this is really, I am defending Craig Zetta on this point and all of the guys. And keeping in mind my history of commentary on this, I would much prefer the VAR didn't come in. But now we've got to manage it. This is really early in the whole VAR life.
Mm.
And mate, Muzz, you're a mathematician by trade, 4-unit maths, I think you keep telling us.
That is speedy.
That, you know, you see a problem and all your training goes into that. If you're grown up as a, that's the first thing you look for, an assistant referee is offside. Now, blending that into VAR world, of course, is his requirement, and he failed and he's been dealt with. I want to know if the bloke on the field who should have adjudicated at the time has been dealt with similarly.
And my point on the Sydney FC Wanderers VAR decision to overrule the goal, I said it at the time, if they let the goal stand, it's not going to be a massive talking point. They take the goal away, it's a blockbuster of a talking point.
I agree 100%.
That's what you've got to think about.
Yep. Yeah, no, it's even more crystallised than that, Speedy, because this was sold to us on, we've got the technology, let's avoid the embarrassing mistake. And even Luddites like me had to say, well, it's hard to argue with that. Now, I'd rather not, but okay. So we steamroll into this, let's get rid of the obvious error, which was the catch cry, clear and obvious error. Mm. It has not taken long at all for the overreach into the right-wrong decision, the hairline decision. That's not what it was for, exactly to your point.
And then on a Tuesday night, the FFA Cup final is on. They put some referees behind the goals. They have no VAR, no discussion on it throughout the night. There was the line ball offside call for the winner when Ben Halloran providing the layoff. There was talk, and some fans will say that he was offside, but the replay showed he was onside just for a fraction of a second when he needed to be, because he was off either before or after. So credit Daniel Ilievski, the assistant on the far side, who had no VAR backup, makes the right call. I'm telling you, there's some assistants who would have given him offside in that situation because they're watching, you know, a moving parts. So we got it right last night and there was no VAR, and gee, it was happy days.
Mm. And as you said, Melbourne Victory versus Perth on Sunday, no VAR and a very enjoyable game. I think I did make the point to you on Sunday. We now take that shot of the VAR centre just before kickoff. I was expecting to either see Greg O'Rourke standing behind them with a sawn off, or the referees
bound and
gagged.
just on that, Muzz, I am going to send, I don't know if I get your permission to do this, being the Grand Mufti of this organisation, but I am going to send FFA an invoice for my phone, if that's okay.
Oh, yes, I forgot to point that out. We do have our first casualty of the VAR.
Yeah, is that all right with you?
Yes.
Well, because I'm leaving the ground, Sydney Cricket Ground, with my mate Brenton Speed, and it took us about a millisecond or me before we started frothing at the mouth about that VAR decision, right? And with Speedy's introduction, I find myself getting incredibly worked up and my arms start moving in concert with my rant and my pace. And then I bumped Speedy's hip with my hand and the phone. It was like one of those George Costanza moments.
No!
Everything went into slow motion. No! And then it's just shattered outside the members' entrance.
Right, the Avenue, maybe, yeah.
Yeah, terrible.
And I wanted to take some responsibility, but Harps left me off. I thought I was going to cop an invoice, but gave me the all clear on VAR.
Speedy, I know that would be a complete waste of time sending you an invoice.
Righto, that's enough VAR for this week. Let's hope we're not talking about it next week. Just a reminder that today's Fox Football podcast is brought to you by FIFA 19 Champions Rise. Show us your champion moment for your chance to win Champions League tickets, including flights and accommodation. Thanks to FUT United. I'm going to say that three more times so that you can all giggle in the background. FUT United, and FIFA 19. Terms and conditions apply. See www.futunited.com for details. That's www.futunited.com. We touched on the W League before. Just to give you the results, if you didn't catch them, Sydney FC beat the Wanderers 3-0. Victory in Adelaide played out a scoreless draw. Canberra opened their season with a 2-0 win over last season's champions, three-time former champions, Melbourne City. Brisbane and Perth drew 1-1 this weekend on Thursday night football. Melbourne Victory versus Newcastle. Friday is the grand final replay. Melbourne City versus Sydney FC. Saturday, the Wanderers play Brisbane and also Canberra play Perth Glory with Sam Kerr back for the Glory. Speedy, just a quick one. Sydney FC looked ominous on Thursday night in that win over Western Sydney. Devanna, Ford, Legazzo and Huerta combining very well.
Yeah, Huerta is a US international, and she, Jill Ellis wants her to play in the fullback role or outside back, as Huerta describes it in US football, US soccer talk about it. So she's been given the opportunity to play as a fullback, and boy, she is a fantastic player. And as you say, Caitlin Ford's up front. She could score a stack of goals, got two the other night. So looking forward to seeing her in action week in, week out. And they've got players to come back like Amy Harrison and Alana Kennedy. So they look like the powerhouse this year.
Righto, let's move on. Paul Pogba, you wanted to talk about him, Speedy. World class or myth? What's your thoughts?
I think he is an amazing player, and the cliche English pundit response is to say, oh, gee whiz, Paul Pogba. He's a frustrating player to watch. You know, he gives the ball away. I'm not sure if I'm a teammate of his. I like the way he goes about it. Paul Pogba just won the World Cup.
Where did that commentary come from?
I hear it all the time.
It was a slight English-American
Estonian. You've come from college soccer. You're still halfway across the Atlantic, bro. You haven't touched down yet.
But you take my point. He just won the World Cup. Yeah. And when he plays for Manchester United, he scored an absolute belter in the Europa League a few weeks back, or Champions League. They're playing Champions League, aren't they? Yeah. Top corner. Thank you very much. His weight of pass, the fact that he can see a pass and puts it, Martial plays them in around the corner and they butcher his lead up work. And then he gives the ball away once. And that's the one thing the pundits focus on, is Paul Pogba giving him the ball away once. Stop the cliche English pundits and actually watch Paul Pogba's 90 minute performance. He's as good as it gets right now. Mm.
Is there a suspicion of, on behalf of these people, that Paul Pogba is the reason why Mourinho is so unsettled and the team is not performing? Is it more than just his individual performance and his overall influence on the football club? Is that what people are suspicious of?
Maybe. And you saw the behind the scenes, that wonderful documentary done. He was happy to stand up to Deschamps as well, wasn't he, Paul Pogba?
That was brilliant.
He's a leader in the dressing room of all the teams that he plays for. And maybe Mourinho's got his nose out of joint. Mourinho then feeds the pundits or whatever the criticism. I'll keep an eye on Pogba. He's giving the ball away too much. But, I can't watch enough of Pogba.
Well, Mourinho chased him. I mean, we're not rewriting history. He chased him, brought him in. Why wouldn't he harness that leadership quality?
He's on the way out, isn't he? He's got the feeling that this is the time frame when Mourinho just melts down, and I'm not sure it's a Pogba issue at the moment.
What'd you make of the 28-step penalty?
You know what? Paul Pogba's just got to pull his head in.
Absolutely. I did hear a comment on another podcast this morning, the Guardian's podcast. Someone had written in and said, if Paul Pogba was a proclaimer, how long would he take to walk 5,000 miles?
500
miles. All right, let's quickly move on. Speedy, Australia disappointing out in the quarters of the AFC Under-19 Championships, a 3-1 loss to the Saudis, but you saw someone that you liked.
Yeah, I did, but gee, where's the scoreline?
Could have been 10-1.
Yeah. That 3-1.
Really?
Lucky. And our equaliser was just lucky. Nathaniel Atkinson somehow fell on his boot and it went in the bottom corner. But that was a brilliant performance by Saudi Arabia. By half time, it should have been 5 or 6. And I'm not sure. They look faster across the ground, and that is our big problem. At all levels, I reckon. We just don't have the pace to go with some teams. And where is Saudi Arabia finding all these fast players that absolutely burn us in wide areas? But there was one player who stood out. He's at Ipswich Town as well, Muzz.
Yep. Ben Falami?
Great player, Falami.
Yep.
Every time he got the ball, he took on his man, and he looked like the Saudi wingers were going past our blokes. But He whipped in nice balls. They weren't really finished off, but he was a standout for Australia. And I wouldn't be surprised if he's the next Smokey called into a Socceroos squad in the next 6 months.
Is he getting a start for Ipswich, who I think are bottom of the championship and have just got a new manager in Paul Lambert, who becomes the first coach ever to coach Norwich and Ipswich?
He's only played a handful of minutes for Ipswich Town, so I suppose that's the worry. But you see enough, and in the Ange era, he'd always talk to his underage coaches. He'd be there as well, and he'd try and pluck one after these sort of tournaments, and I think he's the one.
Speaking of Ange, we mentioned it last week, but no joy. The Yokohama F Marinos lost the League Cup final in Japan, Harps, to Shonan Bellmare.
Yeah, 1-0.
Yeah.
I had spoken with Ange since, actually.
Yep.
I feel very privileged. Now, he's very happy with the team's performance, gutted by the result. And I said to Ange, this is the first final he's lost. I said, now you know how we mortals feel. and it's taking him, it'll take him a while to get over. This is so competitive. But we'll wait and see what Ange does. I believe, he didn't tell me this, but I think going into Yokohama F. Marinos, it was a one-year deal originally. So that they've got four games to go. And you could imagine now there's all sorts of discussions going on about do we keep him, and from him do I stay? The top scoring team in the league, which is something to hang your hat on, in a very competitive league. And it was really sad that I think that he couldn't have won some silverware first up. That would have been a massive statement on behalf of his quality and indeed on behalf of Australian coaches.
And when you spoke to him, was he crying out for VAR in the Japan League Cup? Because apparently they were denied a stonewall penalty.
Yeah, no, there is no... I didn't detect any hankering from either he or just reading the Japanese stuff in general. And the point he did make about Japanese football, which we sort of... It gets lost on us because we just watch them at national team interactions and then through the Champions League, is how conservative Japanese football culture is. It doesn't surprise me because I think Japanese culture is conservative. It's very hierarchical and long-standing. But I thought their football was a little bit more avant-garde. Look at the types of players they produce. And, of course, that would be a challenge for Ange, you could imagine, who's not a conservative coach by any stretch. So there's a few observations to be made there. I couldn't imagine, unless VAR is mandated from European head office, that it's got to be league-wide, I reckon the Japanese will probably be pretty slow on the uptake.
And we've been keeping an eye on Ange's results this year, and I was making the point early on that he had to play Nakazawa, a 40-year-old centre-half, and the results were poor there. They looked a rabble at the back. Then he brought a Brazilian in, really stiffened things up defensively. And did Nakazawa get injured or did Ange manage to force him out? I think you told me at one stage that they pick and choose when they go, the 40-year-old defenders.
Well, it's not whether you're a defender or not, it's whether you're a statesman. Yeah. And in Japanese corporate and sporting culture, if you've got this iconic status, it's very hard to move it. Kazu Miura, one of my all-time favourites, is still playing nominally in the...
In his 50s.
Yeah. So these guys don't move. And I don't know if it was an injury or a management issue that's seen Nakazawa get less time, but you could imagine how tough a fight that would be, particularly for a foreign coach, if they wanted to move one of these iconic players. Yuji Nakazawa has been enormous for many years, and they're pretty difficult to dislodge if any particular coach decides it's time for them to go.
Finally, it would be remiss of us if we didn't send our thoughts and prayers to everyone at Leicester City Football Club after the helicopter crash on the weekend that killed their owner and four other members aboard the helicopter, and also a speedy recovery to Glenn Hoddle, who had a heart attack in the studios at BT in the UK on the weekend. He is recovering, but I can tell you that Glenn Hoddle is one of the reasons I love football, Arps. Mm. And in fact, he's probably the reason that I followed Spurs as a youngster. So he's a very special player, and if people are listening who don't know a lot about Glenn Hoddle, just get on YouTube and have a look at some Glenn Hoddle highlights. He is the sort of player that me as a kid, I wanted to be him the way he played football.
And one of the last footballers to play at the SCG before that Sydney Derby on Saturday night. England played a couple of times there in the 80s, and I think Hoddle scored a goal.
Right. Now, this weekend, Melbourne City versus Sydney FC. I can tell you that the English Premier League trophy will be displayed pre-game at Amy Park with Paul Dickoff, the former Manchester City striker.
And Leicester City.
And Leicester City, down under for the game. Saturday, we've got Wellington versus Western Sydney, big triple header on Saturday. Newcastle versus Melbourne Victory and Perth Glory versus Brisbane. Sunday, Central Coast versus Adelaide. Finally, boys, who's it a big weekend for?
The Melbourne Victory. Winless so far and going to Newcastle. We spoke about it earlier, but can they get their first win or does the grand final hangover continue?
I see what you did there.
How long have you been working on that one?
I threw it out after their first game.
You just had to make a little bit more definitive this time.
Who's it a big weekend for?
Adelaide. They need to make sure that they back up after this enormous win last night to win the cup. You don't want to then slide into mediocre league form, because then you've got to unravel all that. So I agree with speedy, most definitely, but I'm watching Adelaide on Sunday against the Mortys. What about you?
I think it's a big weekend for Melbourne City. I think they've got a big chance of knocking off Sydney FC and perhaps...
They'd have to be specials, wouldn't they?
Well, and making a bit of a statement. The other thing which will be interesting is, could Wellington Phoenix be top of the table on Saturday afternoon?
Well, it depends on the news you're going to break about Wellington Phoenix.
Oh, I was going to keep that for another week, but I'll give it to you.
No, you said
I did.
You opened the show with it.
I'm sorry.
Now you're going to be breaking a confidence, aren't you?
No.
You're stringing along the Wellington fans, and they're not going to give it to
them. That's right.
Apologies to the Wellington fan that is listening.
A typical Australian cheat.
Apologies to the Wellington fan who's got this far of the podcast. I can tell you that they ended, unfortunately, so they got deep into discussion with bringing Giuseppe Rossi, the 31-year-old former Italian national team striker, down to New Zealand as their marquee for this season. 32 goals in 52 games for Villarreal back in 2010-11. He was at Manchester United and I think Newcastle United earlier in his career, but unfortunately just got slightly priced out of being a marquee for them, probably due to the fact that the FFA didn't see him as an A-class marquee and therefore that Wellington Phoenix didn't quite have enough money to be able to match what they would have got out of the FFA. But what we do know out of all of that is that the Wellington Phoenix are very much on the lookout for a marquee and things are going well at the Knicks under Mark Rudin this early part of the season.
Do they need a nine? Do they absolutely need a nine? Or can you work that front four or whatever with the talent you've got there?
They've got a lot of talent up there.
Yeah, the Burns, the Krishnas. You know.
Mitch Nichols, Sarpreet Singh.
Yeah.
Let's hope for a big crowd at Wellington this weekend. I'm sure there'll be a big crowd at Newcastle. It should be a great weekend. Thanks very much for joining me this week, Brenton Speed and Andy Harper.
Thank you,
Belford. On the Fox Football Podcast.
Fox Football Podcast. We'll be back next week.